Hi there, it's Vicky here from Online Marketing Basics for Busy Website Owners, and welcome to this episode of the podcast where I talk to Toby Moore, who I've met over the past couple of years whilst being a volunteer for TEDx Brighton. Toby is the curator and director for TEDx Brighton, and I've been lucky enough to work with him back in the 2019 event. But Toby is a bit of a renaissance man. He works volunteering at the Hummingbird Project in Brighton. He's a trustee and board member at the Brighton Youth Centre. But the reason that I have got him onto the podcast to have a chat, well, actually, he came to chat in my Facebook group early on in the year, was because Toby is the founder of an operation called the Content Club, where they make content your superpower. And I just love the content that Toby puts out. I love his approach to how businesses should create content for their ideal customers, and I just thought it would be a no-brainer to get him to come into the group and talk about that approach, especially as he's recently launched a new project, a kind of software as a service operation called Poster.Works, which aims to help small businesses repurpose content that they've written. Like I said, we recorded this early on in the year, so there's quite a lot of references to lockdown, even though we're not in that lockdown now. As I record this, we're in lockdown 2 here in the UK. But it still has lots of relevance. And the things we're going to cover in this episode are how to approach creating content, online content specifically for your ideal customer, how to figure out what to say, how to actually sit down and write stuff and create content, and how to repurpose it as well. There's just lots of gold, lots of nuggets that you can utilize for your own content planning, especially if you're starting to think about it for 2021. So have a listen, and then I'll be back at the end just to wrap up and say hi. Enjoy. I'm Vicky Jakes, and in this podcast, I'm aiming to bring you no-nonsense advice on how to drive more traffic to your small business website so that you can start making more money. It will be packed full of hints and tips, jargon-free, and a chance for us to geek out together on a weekly basis. So let's crack on with this week's episode. Here from Online Marketing Basics for Busy Website Owners. We're going to be chatting. Well, I've got a special guest in to chat all about content creation this morning. How easy is it for you to create your own content? How often do you create your own content? Do you have anyone to help you create your own content for your online marketing? And to kick things off, I'm going to say hi to Toby Moore. Hello, Toby.
Hello. How are you?
Yes, very well. Toby and I know each other because we're in the fair city of Brighton. We both live here and work together on TEDx Brighton. Toby, can you tell us all about yourself? Like, give us your origin story.
I don't even want to know that much.
Lead to this very moment.
Yeah, sure. So obviously, like Vicky says, we know each other through working on TEDx Brighton. So TEDx Brighton's the thing that I probably worked on the longest out of everything that I do. I'm probably 8 years into my time on that event now. And I'm the curator and producer of that event. So pick all the speakers, manage the team, all of that sort of stuff. And then in addition to that, I run a business called Content Club, which is a community and training organization for content makers. And then on top of all of that, I have various sort of projects and products that I run as well. So I work with a charity called the Hummingbird Project, which is a youth refugee charity, and I run the sort of leadership coaching side of that for young people. I'm a trustee of the Brighton Youth Centre and sort of work with them in order to help develop different sort of streams around looking after young people in the community, particularly around sports and stuff. And I recently launched a new brand called Poster, which is a content on demand platform. So that's very early days, and looking cooler and cooler by the day. So yeah, that's all the stuff I work on, I think.
Toby, did you always thought when you were young that you'd get into events and event content?
No, when I was little, I was going to be a detective. That was goal number one. And then after school, I went to study music. So I studied music for 2 or 3 years, and very quickly learned. There was a tutor that I had within the first like 3 or 4 weeks of music school said, just to let you know, guys, if you want to have a career in music, you're going to have to play a lot of music that you don't like. And so I decided within the first few weeks of music school that music was always just going to be a hobby. And then I went into IT. And that was my first kind of like proper career out of college was IT. And I was delivering IT services to schools and colleges across the country. And the segue into content came from there because I ended up creating quite an innovative way of managing technical teams for the time.
What was innovative?
It was just very it was very people led in a time when managing IT people and teams was very much around sort of valuing technical capability, and there was a movement at the time going on around kind of very much focusing on customer experience and interpersonal skills. And I sort of pioneered some stuff around that and got the opportunity to sort of write in magazines about it and go and talk at conferences about it. There was kind of like about 18 months of my life where I very quickly went from being an IT person to being a sort of events and marketing person because...
And a speaker.
Yeah, well, I'm pretty good at public speaking and used to get whizzed off around the world to go and do bits and bobs in the sort of technology communities. I much prefer teaching and facilitating now because I don't have to plan as much. Whereas now if I go and do, I don't follow, because I teach public speaking to kids as a part of our work with various charities. I'm very much the teacher and not the doer these days. I'm just way too casual and don't care about how I come across anymore. That's why I suck at it now.
So your experience at that time kind of gave you an understanding of what makes great content from a PR perspective, from a marketing perspective, from a product perspective. What was it you kind of was able to see when you were promoting what you did?
I think it was very much around the concept of talking about it's about explaining ideas in ways that people find understandable and emotionally engaging. And what I have found, particularly in the technology space where I started out, people were taking very almost academic or very technical or very unemotional approaches to talking about themselves, and particularly the big sort of software brands of the time. You know, this is 10 years ago, were not really tapped into that way of thinking and working. You know, it's very commonplace now, but back then it wasn't.
Think from the user's point of view.
If people wanted to market technical products and software and so on, they took a very sort of feature and product-led approach.
I remember it well.
Whereas nowadays, and this is kind of, you know, and I was very much as sort of at the beginnings of this, and which is why I was able to kind of like learn this and apply it in an industry that wasn't really doing very well at it. In terms of actually going, okay, well, what does it, rather than let's talk about what can this software product do for your, you know, catalog of software products, let's talk about how it can make you feel like a more empowered IT manager, or let's think about how you can use this product and these ways of working in order to create better working environments for your staff and customers. And those sorts of themes, you know, those were the sorts of things that seemed really obvious to me at the time in terms of what to talk about, but also having an approach to creating content that did that. So it wasn't just kind of fluff for the sake of fluff and trying to sort of square peg and round hole, like technical boring thing, fluffy care, you know, fluffy emotional thing. It was going, well, how do we say, what is the benefit and value that you're trying to create in the organization? Why is it important? Like, what commercial benefits does it have? What benefits does it have in terms of people's personal and professional development?
I think there's definitely a trend, and especially in the membership I teach in, there's lots of challenges online that are focused on this. Is it's all about identifying your ideal customer and what they want. And how they feel. And I know a lot of small businesses who go through, you know, these challenges or kind of work with coaches or whatever, nowadays do get encouraged to think like their ideal customer, think what they would like, what newspapers they read, how they walk the dog, what podcasts they listen to, why they listen to them, how it makes them feel, why they're really buying your products. But absolutely, that definitely wasn't something that was around 70. No,
but it's also being more reflective than that as well, because at the end of the day, particularly if you're in a very sort of entrepreneurial place, typically your customers are people like you or people who are treading the same path that you trod maybe 2 or 3 years previous or something like that. So it's really actually, you know, I find it very valuable to tap into, you know, who are you? What do you care about? What do you want to talk about? How does the stuff that you deliver make you feel?
As a business owner.
Yeah, but then also like tapping into, rather than thinking so much about ideal customers, think about who you've already got around you. Think about, you know, that. So with Content Club, we've developed a content creation framework, and that's kind of, you know, that's my big product with that particular business. And we don't do customer personas in that way. What we actually do is we think about existing customers and people that we really enjoy working with and people that we have the most sort of thriving business and successful conversations with, and we really tap into what do those conversations look like. What does a conversation with the people that you enjoy working with the most look like? You know, when the phone rings and it's Jeff from whatever company, and you're like, oh, flipping, yeah, brilliant, Jeff, how are you doing? How's that thing going that we put in place for you the other week and all that sort of thing? And you know that you're going to get energy from those conversations. Why? So let's tap into that, and let's talk about the educational qualities of those conversations, the empathetic qualities of those conversations, the entertaining and characteristic qualities of those conversations, and trying to really work out who are you in real life with face to face having conversations. And then once you understand that, and once you can start to build a model around that, replicate that into the content you create. So how do we make sure that the content you create, the writing you produce, the videos you produce have the same educational qualities as your best customer-led conversations and so on? So that's really where I try to position it. And particularly when we're in sort of like workshop style environments and talking to people like that, and people can really get in touch with that, because then they're not imagining what the future could look like. They're reflecting on the best work that they've already done, and then working out how to prune all the bits around that and implement more of what's good, and getting rid of the waste kind of approach.
I think that's a really good approach. What would you advise someone who's just starting out, who doesn't have any customers? Where could they start?
Well, I think that's where separating out what I call the three C's of your audience, which is your customers, your community, and your champions. So for me, everything that I do is some sort of like a three-letter acronym using same. I've got my three E's, my three C's, my four P's. That's how I remember them more than anything. So I like to think of customers, community, and champions. So your customers are obviously people that are paying you for your products and services. If you don't have any of those people, or you want to look outside of that space, the next place to look is your community. So when I started moving into the sort of software marketing side of things from being an IT manager, a lot of the brands that I was working with wanted to build communities. It was a really huge kind of trend in that kind of enterprise space.
Just to interject quickly, do you think that's because of the rise of how, say, Lego did, and kind of other brands like that, where built their company essentially?
Yeah, I think it's probably stupider than that, to be honest. I think people are just doing it because they read it somewhere in some article that that's the next big marketing trend, to be honest. To be honest, the organizations I ended up working for and spending six figures on community projects, you know, that's definitely some of the reasons they were doing it. But also, I think there's something I'm missing there, which is I think they quite often, the brands look at their industries and they see thriving communities. They see the consultants, the training providers, the speakers, and all this sort of thing, like really getting on with each other and putting collaboration and community over the competitiveness of their products and so on. And the very sort of commercialized brands struggle to find their place in that. So what they do, instead of trying to contribute to the community, they try and build their own. So they come up with their own forum, or they come up with their own Facebook group or LinkedIn group. Or, you know, one of the companies I work with, I ended up leading a 120-150k project just to build a forum. Do you know what I mean? And
I've done the same in the pharma industry.
It's crazy. I mean, but that's what we did. The project kind of worked, you know. But it was in lieu of not really having a meaningful way to contribute to the existing community. So when you talk about what do we do if we don't have customers, you know, don't go and create a customer base or a community or whatever. Like, go and find where the existing communities are, where are people already talking to each other, and then become a meaningful contributor to that community. Answer people's questions, you know, create content that fills gaps in conversations and so on.
And you can see that they're already engaging with as well.
Yeah, you have to. It was quite actually my partner Elaine. She sent me this link, and it was a conversation that Maya Angelou and Oprah Winfrey had had, and Oprah Winfrey asked Maya Angelou what was the best advice that she's ever given, and this is beautiful. And she said, "Well, the best advice I think I ever given was to my son, and my son, when he was about 11 years old, said, Mummy, how do I make friends?" And she said that the advice that she gave him was, before you can get a friend, you have to be a friend. And I was like, oh, that's really nice. And that's applicable across all walks of life, including our work, right? So, and I think the community piece is very much that. You have to contribute and become a meaningful contributor and support other people's success before you can then go and ask them to support yours. And you know, and quite often that looks like, yeah, okay, here's a product and a service I have to offer. Would you like to be a customer? You know, and people through the community have trusted you, so they're willing to have that conversation. And they're willing to look.
Actually, it's just going to feed into content ideas, I guess, for you if you're there contributing and observing, right?
Well, conversations are content. And this is something really important to start.
So tell us about this, like some kind of nuts and bolts then. So, you know, you're in that place where you can, you're either contributing to a community and you know where to start, or you're having great discussions with your existing customers. What does that look like from a content point of view?
What's really great about those opportunities is it gives you an opportunity to start creating an idea catalogue of content. So every time you get asked a question, every time you see someone asking a question publicly and you feel like you can contribute to an answer, that's something that you can start cataloguing. So I typically have about 5 questions in my catalog that I'm trying to answer at one time. And then I just list ideas for headline bits of content underneath those 5 questions. And for me, typically those questions focus around, how do I build my own content strategy? How do I get started with content creation? You know, how do I know where my audience is? All that sort of stuff. And I just sort of tweak those as I'm learning more about the people that I'm working with.
And what's interesting, Toby, is that you talked about questions. All of those points are questions that you're answering, as opposed to picking a subject matter and then trying to.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing. Like, I'm like the worst person to talk to around championing like SEO principles and so on. Like, I'm very much, well, questions are the essence of a conversation, right? You know, isn't it really frustrating when you're trying to have a conversation with someone and they're just telling you what to do or how to feel or what to think? Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's not helpful, and it doesn't progress things, and it doesn't build trust, because, you know, the actual purpose of content, you know, we can talk about engagement and sales and all of these sorts of things, but the purpose of content is to build trust with people. You know, that's it. Like, that's the very bottom line. That's all you're trying to achieve with your content, is to build trust, create a meaningful relationship between you and someone that could be a potential customer or a member of your community or a champion of your brand or whatever. That's what you're trying to work
for. Trust being that you are showcasing that you know what you're talking about.
That's one element of it. Yeah, that's very much the sort of educational piece, that idea of sort of demonstrating your knowledge and offering your knowledge and your wisdom and your expertise generously to others as well. But the other side of it is how do you know what to talk about if you haven't given people that you're trying to talk to the opportunity to tell you what they need? By opening up conversations, you ask them questions, they ask you questions. So I talked about like customer personas and stuff. Our audience persona has 3 sections to it, sorry. It has their demographic, so like, how old are they? What do they look like? All that sort of thing. And then we have 2 sections. What questions do they want to ask you? And what questions do you want to ask them? Like, that's it. That's how we populate the persona. So that's the basis for like, well, what conversation do you want to have with these people? You know, what do you want to know about what they're struggling with in their business, so that you can then follow that up with a, oh, well, that's interesting that you should be struggling with that. I actually, you know, if you're interested in coming along for a workshop or a piece of consultancy or for buying this training product that we provide or something, we could actually help you move forward with that. But you can't do that until you start to understand what they're really trying to work on and what they're trying to struggle with. when I worked in the events and exhibition industry, I went on this really amazing sales training. And they, one of the problems that we have when we're selling exhibition space in the events market is that no matter what the customer is trying to achieve, you only have one thing to sell them, which is some string on the floor that marks out where their exhibition stand is. Yeah. You don't have anything else. So wherever the conversation goes, you have to try and lead it towards, well, would you like to sponsor an exhibit arc event? You know, but there's 100 different reasons why someone might do that. Or, you know, what they're trying to achieve and what they've tried before and all that sort of thing. So typically the mistake that salespeople make in that environment is they pick up the phone and they talk to someone and they're like, right, you're going to meet 1,000 people at our event. You can get a really great brand awareness. You can speak in our conference circuit and people will think you're an expert. You can, you know, bring free merchandise and hand that out. You can hand out flyers. You can, you know, they're just listing all of these reasons why you might want to exhibit at the event. Whereas actually, if you just go, okay, well, let's try and work out what their marketing and sales needs are as an organization at the moment and see if we can meet that. So it's like, okay, have you ever exhibited at an event before? Yes, we did. It wasn't very good. Okay, well, what happened? Oh, well, you know, nobody wanted to speak to us. It's like, why do you think that was? Oh, we were tucked away in the corner somewhere. And it's like, oh, okay. So if I were to find you a better location at our event, would that help you? Yeah, that would be much more helpful. Yeah, that would. Okay, well, let's look at the floor plan and see where you think a really prominent space in this event might be for you. So you need to be like, what's, and you know, and as soon as you're in that environment selling face to face, as soon as you're in creating content again, you know, it's the same thing. You know, it's just thinking, okay, well, how do we turn this interaction into a conversation where I can learn enough about the person that I'm talking to in order to help them understand that what I'm selling could genuinely help them.
And Toby, does that apply to, say, B2C people who are selling, you know, consumer products? They might not ever meet
them. No, it's different. So what I like to think about it in calls to action versus calls to conversation. So you typically, for me, I find that e-commerce brands and sort of news sites and influencers, for example, operate much more in the call to action space. They're trying to get attention. They're trying to compete on price and quality. And they just need to get good return on investment on their calls to actions, their clicks and their click-throughs and their conversions and so on. Whereas if you're operating in a more one-to-one or more of a consultancy or subscription-like SaaS type space, you're trying to work in a calls to conversations type objectives where you're trying to, every piece of content, every post that you create is trying to create some form of engagement that you can continue in another space. So an example of that will be, for, you know, for an e-commerce brand, you're going to search, oh, I want to buy a water bottle, a plastic-free water bottle or something like that. So you're going to Google it, and then you're going to see the Google shopping things come up, and you're going to see the different prices and the different materials. And then you're going to click on the one that you think fits within your price point. And then you're going to look at that and be like, yeah, okay, this looks like the product that I want. That looks like the price I want to pay for it. Let's go. Whereas if you're selling like a consultancy thing where you want to go into small companies and help them improve their HR function or something like that, people don't buy that way. They buy in a different way. They don't necessarily understand what the solution is that they're looking for. All they know is that as an HR department, they're struggling to engage with the employees that they have in the way that they want to or something. So that's where content is so important, like that sort of problem solving, question answering, conversation starting content is important, because then you can start going, okay, well, these people want to be able to engage with their employees better. Like, are they going to buy technology for that? Are they going to run internal events or training for that? Are they going to change the way that they're communicating? You know, what do they want to do? How are they going to solve this problem? And if your expertise is in changing the way that HR departments communicate with their wider organization, and you want to come in and you want to do, you know, 2 days discovery and kickoff workshop and then be working with them 3 or 4 days a month in order to implement, you know, a strategy over 6 months or something, and that's going to be, you know, a big body of work for you, you need to be thinking much more in that calls to conversation space with your content. So instead of going, click here to read more, or click here to download the ebook, or click here to, you know, sort of book a one-off consultancy or something like that, it's more about getting through a piece of content and then lacing in these calls to conversation, which is just kind of like, you know, saying things like, Have you ever experienced this problem? If you have, I would actually really like to hear from you and include you in some of the research that I'm doing right now. You know, send me a direct message on LinkedIn if you'd like to have a chat, you know, or instead of saying download my ebook on my web form or something, it's like, if this blog post interests you, I've actually written a 6-page guide on just how to get started with this stuff. If you'd like it, just send me a direct message and I'll ping over the PDF to you, you know, because then you're actually continuing the conversation on a platform where it's not a one for one and you have to sort of manage them through this funnel. It's going, oh, thank you so much for requesting the
interaction.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just increasing the closeness of the conversation. So in order to sell what you do as a consultant or a service provider or a one-to-one or whatever, you really do need to get to some sort of face-to-face style conversation, even if it's like this over a Zoom, you know. But you probably don't have the capacity in your life and your time and your work day and so on in order to have face-to-face conversations with every prospect that you could possibly sell to. So you need to see content as an extension of those conversations. You know, how can you take the conversation that you want to be having and then replicate that conversation through content?
Do you think then, just to sort of sign off on the kind of the product and e-commerce type people, that some of the content they could be creating then is through objections as to why people wouldn't buy their product compared to their competitor? However, it's not as, you know, interactive perhaps as kind of
self-care. Well, yeah. So for example, if your USP is that you're the most ethical place to buy a bamboo water bottle from or something like that, yeah. Like how do you build trust in your brand through the ethics and the values that your brand adheres to?
And there's a story behind that, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. You know, and that's something that the likes of Amazon, for example, can't provide, or Sainsbury's or Tesco's or whatever. So how do you meet that need? How do you have those conversations? Because the chances are, if you're selling into sort of eco buyer type communities, they're already thriving communities on Facebook, on, you know, on Instagram and so on. So how do you become a part of those conversations? How do you, you know, basic stuff like using the hashtags to actually sort of going in and finding where people are asking questions and creating content that answers those questions.
So we've got a lot of guidance here from you, which has been amazing, right, in terms of like what you should write and answer, you know, just to make it succinct, but I know it's much broader than that, is answering questions that people are asking, being part of, you know, the current conversations that people are having. And so quite often that comes out as blog posts or news items or, you know, content on your website. How often should people be writing content like this, do you think? I have an opinion about this, but
yeah. And normally the sort of consultant answer would be it depends, and we can transcend that advice and create something more useful. And the way that I like to think, the most important factor here is actually understanding what is manageable to you.
Yes.
Because there is no right or wrong answer. If you publish one really fucking great piece of content once a month and 1,000 people engage with that in, you know, over 20 minutes or something, like, that's great. You know, that's that killer podcast you're releasing once a month or something. If you're blogging every day and everyone's tuning in, that's great. If you're publishing a podcast every day and no one's listening, you know, what was the value in that? So not the value for the audience, but the value for you. When you're an independent or a business owner or a very small team, the motivation to and the energy that you have to create content is probably the most significant factor that you need to work on in order to succeed. Because what I see over and over again in the Content Club community, which is a very similar audience, is people who have been blogging for a couple of months, or they've had an idea for a vlog that they want to create for 4 to 5 months and not got them off the ground and so on. And it's the lack of productivity or the lack of engagement that they've had when they have had spurts of productivity that then put the sort of toxic feelings in that content production life cycle. So they go, oh, do you know what? Well, I'd love to write a blog this week, but chances are no one's going to read it anyway, so why bother? So actually, or it's the other way around, which is going, I'm going to write a content strategy, and you write the most beautiful content strategy where you're going to publish 8 blogs a week and, you know, and do Instagram live every Friday and all this sort of stuff, and make sure you're sending out newsletters and publish that ebook, so you're building up your newsletter list and all that sort of stuff. And like, on paper, this looks like a dream, you know.
Oh, I don't know.
Exactly. And then, you know, and if you buy all these fancy courses and stuff that you see on Facebook, they're just selling you these templates of things to do. And the problem is that they're unimplementable because you're just one person. When I'm taking people through content strategies, that we have three goals at the very start of any content strategy course that I do, which is like, you're going to create something that you can walk away and put into action today. It's going to be easy and manageable, you know, and it's going to be something you enjoy doing, you know. But the manageable bit is so important, because if you give yourself too much to do, within a few weeks you've lost your place in that plan, and then you very quickly lose motivation to do anything at all. And that's when you start not believing in your content, and then as soon as you lose your belief in your content, you lose belief in your ideas, and then you lose belief in your business, and then you lose belief in yourself, you know. And that's the really, really difficult spiral to go down. So it's really important to make sure that very, very first bit is, okay, I'm going to write a blog once a month. That's fine. That's a good place to start. You know, focus on making sure that you've got, and before I like to encourage people to work on their templates and their plans before they put pen to paper anyway. So, you know, I have some pretty hefty client output to work on, you know, the best of times, you know, and the only way that I can produce 10,000 words worth of written content for a client in a month is if I template and plan it before.
Yeah.
So I know that, you know, that 10 blog posts, you know, look like this. They're going to be 700 to 800 words long, and they're going to have four headings in them, and each heading is going to have 200, 300, 500 words underneath it, you know. And if I don't template the stuff, my productivity around actually creating that content is so hugely exacerbated, you know,
because you haven't visualized what you actually need to create. You know?
No, and you don't know what questions you're going to answer. So the winning formula to creating great blog content, it's not just blog content, any content can use this formula, but it's the easiest one to start with is blogging. And I call it the 20-30-50 rule, or the what, why, how. Basically, you write a what question, a why question, and a how question, and then you write 20%, 30%, and 50% of your content underneath that. And you give yourself a set word count. So like, if you want to write 1,000 words, it's 200 words. What's the idea about? You know, 300 words, why is this idea important? 500 words, how do you implement this idea? You know, and if you can create that template first, you know, and you can create that for half a dozen pieces of content in about an hour. The next step is, okay, well, Wednesdays are my blogging day, so I just need to sit down on a Wednesday and start filling the gaps on that template.
Yeah, and giving yourself that time, like that habit of time, is really important. Like, I know at the moment, like it's Thursday today, so I know, okay, in my head, there's an NHS clap at 8 p.m. I know on Monday it's my new show that's coming out on Netflix. Yeah. Like, little habits that we have, but for some reason we don't have our, okay, I'm going to write my blog post habit, and that's quite
important. But it's also what's really important to productivity around content creation is to break up that time into planning, producing, and promoting, my three P's. because the planning bit is a bit where you come up with all of the ideas, where you sketch out the questions, where you check those questions against your persona and so on, you know. And that should be something that you maybe do once a month, you know, maybe spend an hour or two on it and just sort of make sure that you've got a plan in place, and you know, and write down the half a dozen bits of content that you want to create that month and so on. Just get it all planned out. You don't necessarily have to do like a full content schedule and work out what your content calendar is going to look like. It's just deciding what you're going to create, and then it's going, okay, well, Wednesday mornings, that's my day for actually sitting down and trying to write 1500 words or something like that. And then what instead of doing spending the first 45 minutes of that morning wondering about what to write, you just go to your content catalog and you just pull something off the shelf and you go, this is the idea, this is the template. And within 5 minutes, you're writing. And that allows you to manage your production of content separately to your planning. And then you get that the complex of publishing the content and then getting it off because nobody read it. And that's why, and the reason that people do that is because they don't put the same amount of time into promoting their content as they do into producing it.
So tell us about Poster, because that's...
Okay. Yeah, so that, I mean, that very does neat link very neatly in. So Poster was kind of my answer to helping people make their content go further, because, you know, I would spend weeks with people helping them get all of the sort of great ideas and productivity things
and stuff, mindset like, stuff as well.
Yeah, in order to publish one great blog, do you know what I mean? And yeah. And then it's like, okay, now what do I do with it? And it's like, well, show it to everyone. And they're like, oh, I don't know, yeah. You know, I don't really have time, and I just want to work on the next blog now, and so on. So I've been thinking about it for ages, like, how do I help people with that part of the journey without having to do it for them, basically? And one of the topics that was coming up more and more and more in Content Club events was repurposing. And there's some really, really talented people in our community that have been publishing great content about how to repurpose your content. And it really inspired me to go and build something. You know, I'm much more a product builder than a service provider in terms of my sort of entrepreneurial archetype, if you like. But so I like the idea of trying to create something that is relatively self-service. So Poster is effectively a content on demand service where you upload the blog post that you've created, and then you select from an e-commerce style store how much content you want created off the back of that.
Okay.
And you just go in, you go to poster.works or postercontent.com, and just upload your blog, fly off to the to the order screen, select what you want, and then 3 or 5 days later we send you the chopped up content. And it's all based on templates. So everything that I just told you about shortening and creating as much efficiency in that production space comes down to templating. So I've created 20 templates for written content, 20 templates for social media images, and so on. And then I've got like a little network of people that I work with exclusively in Brighton in order to create that content. And
so this really helps those who just can't even begin, like they've got as far as writing the blog post, but they can't even begin to think about repurposing. I mean, tell us like the issues you've seen when people have tried to repurpose like blog content.
I just don't think it's a very intuitive process to most people. And I think people are, if you've created something, it's very easy to be quite critical of your work. Whereas somebody else looking at it can look at it and be like, that's a brilliant quote. That question that you've answered there, excellent. You know, that's what people want to see. So I think there's an element of that to it. So I know, for example, like in my approach to creating content, that I'm very good at the planning section. I'm very good at creating my core content. So like my, you know, I've got some really nice videos, webinars, ebooks, that sort of stuff. Really, you know, the long form stuff, because that's where my background is. But when it comes to actually creating smaller bits of content and promoting myself online, my strengths aren't there and my energy isn't there.
Yes.
So I typically tend to find other people to help me with that bit. So it's understanding that you can't, you know, I just said, oh, it's really easy. You just, you know, break up your planning and your production and your promotion. But it's not that easy, because you might not be very good at one bit, or you might not have energy for another bit. And it's understanding where you want the help. And going, okay, so I tend to look at it, I can do 100% of my planning, 50% of my production, and then I have two or three other people that help me with the other 50% of production and 100% of the promotion.
Do you think it's feasible that business owners can, like, let's just say hypothetically, like blog once a week, repurpose content across those three channels once or twice a day, so having, you know, original bits of content, without going through some type of content burnout or without a system? I mean, you've talked about like the three
things. Simplify the system, you know, the system. And so it's, and it comes down to time boxing, I think, and just going, it's Thursday afternoon. I go through the last blog post that I wrote, or just find one that I wrote in the last few months, and I copy and paste a dozen bits of text out of it, and I reshuffle those into Facebook and LinkedIn posts. And then I go into my Hootsuite or something and I schedule them, you know. And that process, if you design the process and you learn to follow it, that should only take you 90 minutes really to do something like that. Okay. The trouble is that we don't allocate that time, and then we sit down and, you know, I'm the best person at not following my advice. You know, I mentioned to you when we were preambling before, definitely become a teacher and not a doer in many respects, particularly when it comes to public speaking stuff. But it's, you know, it's the same with this. Like I'm classic. I'll sit there on a Thursday afternoon and be like, I haven't published anything on LinkedIn this week. And, you know, and I know that's a really important platform for me. So I'll get my phone out and I'll start typing something, and then I'll start searching around my website for some images to use. And then I'll stop and I'll be like, no, Toby, you didn't use your system, you know, and your punishment for not using your system is you didn't get to publish anything this week. Like, don't do this ad hoc. Don't do this on the fly. Don't try and come up with ideas when you've got a catalogue of ideas sitting in Trello that you know work.
When you repurpose content for people, how are you creating it so that it's right for the different platforms? with Instagram, with LinkedIn, with Facebook, what's the difference between how you're repurposing from a blog for those platforms?
Yeah, so a lot of it tends to just be with length and image. I mean, then there's the technical thing around image size as well. So, but also, I mean, it's really important to think about what's native to those platforms, for example. So just really simple things, like if you're writing for LinkedIn, address your LinkedIn contacts at the top of the blog, you know, like saying, hey, LinkedIn, yeah, you know, or hey, contact, you know, sort of, hello, community, I've been, you know, I read something on LinkedIn last week and it's got me thinking and blah, you know. So just referencing the platform that you're publishing to in your post is sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes a good thing.
And with LinkedIn, the tone has to be different from Instagram or Facebook when you're repurposing.
People like to think that, and there's, you know, there's the like, it's a professional network, you know.
This isn't Facebook. I've seen
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah. But my honest response to that is that the only, you know, these platforms show you what you want, right? So if you're using LinkedIn and fiddling around making comments on Sudoku challenges around this isn't a professional network or something. Yes. Like LinkedIn's just going to show you more crap like that. You know what I mean? So, whereas actually if you're creating content every week and you're interacting and engaging with content every week that's relevant to your industry and, you know, and is engaging with peers that you look up to and want to be in a community with, it's just going to show you more stuff like that. LinkedIn's really good at rewarding people that contribute to other people's content. So if you don't have anything to share this week, just go and make 3 comments on other people's content that you have found useful or you think is valuable.
Yeah.
Because LinkedIn is very good at rewarding that, you know, not in the Facebook and Instagram don't think like that. So we're not used to thinking like that. But every time that you comment or you like or you share somebody else's content, it notifies their network and yours in slightly different ways. So contributing to community and so on, you know, LinkedIn does reward that.
So I guess as well, from that point of view, if you are being served a post in LinkedIn that is already been doing quite well and you engage and join in with that, it's also a chance for you to see what type of content gets engagement as well. Mm. Right? And, you know, maybe emulate that in the content that you're
playing. Yeah, and I've also, you know, don't be disheartened if like your first or, you know, first few bits of content don't take off, because I think LinkedIn rewards consistency as well. So I tend to find, you know, I go through ebbs and flows of creating video series for LinkedIn, and I tend to find that the first one I published rarely gets much traction. The second one doesn't get much traction, but the third one always peaks, and quite significantly so. And so I think it likes to see that you're putting content on that platform consistently.
When you repurpose content from a blog on different social medias, should you always link back to that blog post, or could you just take the key points, I guess, and use those? Because we're talking about LinkedIn, not a massive fan, from what I understand, the algorithm of showing posts that like take you away from LinkedIn.
No, this is the thing. Like, well, all of the platforms are like that. So it's sort of slightly the point that I was trying to make earlier, is that think about what's native to that platform, keep people on that platform. So the answer to this question comes back to like, what's the next level of engagement that you want to take those people too, you know. So if it's a blog, or if it's a downloadable piece of content, or if it's a question that you want answered, or if it's a survey that you want filled in, like, think about, are you doing this as a call to action or as a call to conversation? And if it's a call to conversation, try and keep it on the platform, because the platform will reward you for that in terms of its algorithm and so on, and the person using the platform will prefer that too. They're more likely to engage with you. So if it's, you know, so yes, you've written a blog post and you don't just want to sort of take a quote out of it and post people over to that blog post, because, you know, in reality, what's that going to do for you? Like, how many sales are you likely to get off the back of that? If you think that there might be a few, like, go ahead, give it a go. But if you think what you're really trying to do is that there's a marketing manager at these sorts of companies and you'd like to try and have a conversation with a few of those this week, take the interesting bits out of that blog post, turn it into 75, 125 words as a LinkedIn post, find a nice image that you can include with that, chuck a couple of emojis in or something in order to break it up. And then it's that call to action is more about, you know, rather than go and read the full blog on my website, you know, what's your opinion on this? You know, this is what I think. What do you think? You know, put it in the comments below. Send me a direct message today, and I'd love to have a chat with you. you know, and you're getting that conversation started, you know. So actually what you're doing, rather than just sort of trying to push people through a content funnel of little piece of content, big piece of content, bigger piece of content, email, newsletter, maybe they'll buy something from me someday, it's thinking, you know, what's the hook, what's the conversation starter, and then how do I take that and scale it down to a face-to-face conversation.
So tell us, finally, Toby, how can people work with you on Poster?
Just head over, give it a go. You can get £25 off your first order with discount code TRYPOSTER. the key thing is
that's funny, you know,
I'm a real big believer in people creating their own content. But I also recognize that it's difficult to do that at the scale that you need to in order to grow your business in the way that you probably want to, which is why I think for me, Poster is such an elegant solution, because
it can be both.
You get to put that time and energy and effort to creating one piece of content that you're proud of, and then ask people that have the skills in order to create, you know, content on scale to take that further and wider for you. So just give it a go. Have a look at Poster. It's poster.works is the website name. And if you want to have a go, have a go.
Toby, thanks so much for coming to chat to me today all about content. I feel like there's probably like another, I do say this a lot, but I really genuinely, really mean this. I feel like we could have talked another hour about stuff to do, but I think what you've done today is really conveyed that we can do this with just a little bit of structure, a little bit of planning, and taking the pressure off of ourselves to be perfect.
Yeah, it all comes to this. For me, the two most significant elements are productivity and confidence. And those are the two things that if you want to focus on your capability as a content creator, those are the two things to focus on, because your confidence to actually like put pen to paper and create something that means something, that is genuinely reflective of how you feel and what you think and how you want to connect and empathize with people, and isn't just something content for the sake of content because someone down the pub or Gary Vee or whatever told you to do it.
Right.
And then the other thing is your productivity, you know, and actually that's not about being super productive and pushing yourself harder and harder to do more. It's actually about doing less. And it's actually just being much more respectful of your own time and going, okay, no, I know that I need to plan. I know that I need to make, and I know that I need to get this stuff out there. So how do I just create enough time in the week? And I know that it's coming up because it's in my calendar or whatever. Like, just be really respectful of your own time and how much creativity and how much creative energy you've really got. And just do the absolute best that you can within those constraints that you know you have.
Oh, I'll leave us on that positive note. Hello, I'm back. That was good, wasn't it? That was a good natter. Really enjoyed talking to Toby and kind of getting his perspective on content creation. He's really rather good at doing content creation over on LinkedIn. So do go and check him out and connect over there. I think you can find his new venture poster.works. And I've had a little sneaky peek inside, and it's really rather good. I just loved the insight that he brought to the chat. And it turns out his approach to how you create content for your ideal customer isn't a million miles away from what we talk about in the Supercharge Your Website membership. But I just really loved the idea that you create content that is useful. It's just like we say with websites, it's not about you, it's about your ideal customer. So I hope you managed to take a good one or two things away from that chat that you can apply to your own content, especially now as we're all starting to think, or you might be starting to think about planning your content for 2021. So thanks again for listening. Please do subscribe to this podcast. And if you have been enjoying a few episodes, I would be your best friend forever if you fancied heading over to iTunes and leaving a little review. Reviews just help this podcast get seen. And it's my aim to try and get this podcast well, listened to and seen as much as possible in 2021, so I can help as many business owners with websites like you as I can. All right, thanks again for listening. Take care. Bye-bye.